Oh, this is the business lunch. Forgive us, folks. We got a lot of ground to cover in this hour. And let's start out with our first guest is John Beaver. He's the president of Phase 3 Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm and registered principal with Royal Alliance Associates. John, thank you for joining us on the business lunch today.
Well, it's great to be with you, Johnny and Steve. Your voices take me back to the beginning of my career.
Really?
You're blaming us?
You were up late. You were up late studying for exams, I bet, right?
Great memories.
Oh, good. Well, let's talk about some bad news first. Of course, the Fed came up with the news that the interest rates going up. Do you see this happening again before the end of the year? Look into your crystal ball, John.
Yeah, well, the crystal ball says we're not going to get better anytime soon. You know, the Fed and inflation have served up a wonderful buffet for the bear. Stocks, bonds, energy, commodities, Bitcoin. So it's all struggling right now. And it's because of the rapid rise in interest rates. If the rise in rates was slow, it wouldn't be that hard on the market. But it's the rapid rise that is unsettling to virtually every market that's out there. And so until we get through this interest rate increase, this is what we're going to be looking at, is this volatility. And Chairman Powell made it very clear. He made it very clear in Jackson Hole. He made it very clear in comments after that, that they're not going to relent until inflation comes down to 2% and unemployment goes at least over 4%.
Historically, have we been down this road before, or are we talking about decades since we've experienced something like this?
Well, we have been down this road before. In terms of the Treasury market, because this is really one of the worst Treasury markets we've experienced, we have had shocks to the Treasury market in 1994 and 1998. Also 2013, not as bad as this. 2020 was different. That was actually due to the pandemic and COVID. But we have been down this road before. But we really have to go back to the late 1960s and 70s to find a similar type of environment. And that is an inflationary environment that is going to be around for quite a while. We may be looking at decades of fighting inflation. Doesn't mean we're going to stay at 8 or 9% over decades. But this could be a couple of decades of fighting the inflation front at this point in time. So that's what would be helpful to take a look at. And it's really similar to the weather here in Chicago. So if you think about spring, summer, fall, and winter, it's very clear that inflation heats up during spring and summer and declines, or that interest, excuse me, the temperature rises during spring and summer and declines during fall and winter. Well, in the economic cycle, it's inflation that heats up during economic spring and economic summer. And that's where we're at right now. We are in economic spring, moving into economic summer as we look at things.
So to keep some of our friends who are looking at us from the 18th floor of buildings surrounding where we are at WGN, to keep them from jumping out the windows, what's your advice?
Yeah, the advice is hang on, because if you take a look at a chart of the stock market in the 1960s, it's actually pretty good. The dance is three steps forward, one step back, three steps forward, one step back. So right now, we're in the one step back, and it doesn't feel good. It's not nice, but eventually this market will bottom, and it'll start to rise again. Now, at the next new high, that's where we have to really start to evaluate. Are we moving into economic summer, and what's going on with inflation? Has the Fed gotten things under control? But that's probably a couple years down the road. So the opportunity that's created right here is actually being able to go back to the bond market. You know, it's been phrase has been Tina, there is no alternative, meaning that bonds aren't a place to put money. Cash isn't a place to put money. The only place to put money is stocks. And that has lulled investors into a false sense of security. So anybody that has money on the sidelines right now, or money that's sitting in cash, they could start to think about maybe locking in some bonds. Probably a little early yet for the stock market, but for the long-term investors, they can be putting that money in a month at a time. And perhaps the next sector that's going to look positive is actually the banking and financial sector, because they benefit from higher interest rates.
My pea-sized brain says, for the average investor, it's good to not do what the stock market does. The stock market reacts instantly, emotionally. And doesn't it make more sense for the average investor just to
hang on,
take a breath, pause, and don't react instantaneously to anything?
Absolutely. In fact, the average investor, the best way to handle your portfolio is to break it into time frames. The money that you need over the next 5 years, the money that you need in 10 years, and the money that you need 10 years hence. So the money that's out there long term, that can just be in the market, and keep putting money in the market that you're not going to need for 10 or 20 years. In an environment like this, you're buying more stocks with those same dollars. So that's actually a very good thing. That's what you want to do. You want to buy low and sell high. For the shorter term money, that money really should never be in the market. Any money that you need over the next 5 years, that should always be in cash and bonds. And for that medium term money, work with your advisor, because it really does depend on your risk tolerance, the value of the market at the time, and so on. For example, right now, the market still is not cheap. The market is looking interesting, but it's not cheap at this point in time. So in order for the market to be cheap, we need to get this market down another maybe about 8%.
John, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. John Beaver is advisor with Phase 3 Advisory Services.
There was a story that caught our attention in the Chicago Tribune. We fly a fair amount out of both O'Hare and Midway, and there was a really interesting story by Sarah Freistadt, a Chicago Tribune reporter who covers transportation, and it had to do with the rankings of O'Hare and Midway in a new airport survey. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This was a fascinating story. Take us through it, if you will.
Sure. So J.D. Power put out its annual airport rankings this week, and O'Hare and Midway both fell in terms of passenger satisfaction from last year, just like airports did nationwide. Mm-hmm. So, you know, basically, as more people are returning to airports and to travel, airports are getting more crowded and people are less happy with the experience.
And can I add, our own experience was at O'Hare Airport, construction, getting through the terminals, getting through the maze of cones and workers and such. Would that also add to our displeasure?
Sure. Yes, there is quite a bit of work underway at O'Hare, and quite a bit more planned moving forward. And certainly the experience of getting around the airport, getting to the airport, is certainly a role in these rankings.
We also talked with some friends that have had different experiences traveling with a wheelchair passenger. At Midway, they said it is really relatively organized. There's an area where you go, and if you have a wheelchair, you sit and you wait, and you get taken to the plane. At O'Hare, they said it is just absolutely chaotic. You get this little
ticket,
and you're supposed to stand over by a wall. But
our friend said, I can't stand. I was let out of the car with a walker. They took my walker. I mean, it just sounds dreadful.
And they also said they were able to do curbside check-in at Midway. They can't do curbside check-in at O'Hare.
Yeah. So there are a lot of grievances, right, Sarah?
There certainly are. And it's interesting that you mention wheelchair service and some of the other amenities at the airports. I do not know exactly what's behind that, but I do know that some of these amenities are, you know, kind of falling victim to the same trends we're seeing all over the place with short staffing.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's what they'll tell you. We just don't have enough people to push those wheelchairs. And it is. I was also told that the O'Hare folks are an outside company that comes in to do that business. Mm-hmm. So that's not really a reflection on O'Hare per se. How low is low for O'Hare and Midway when we're looking at a ranking of the airports? I mean, are we the bottom or close to the bottom?
So a little bit of a mixed bag. Both O'Hare and Midway are below average when compared to airports of similar sizes. Now, O'Hare is actually very close to the bottom. It's not quite the last one. It was ranked second to last.
Oh, gosh.
With only Newark in New Jersey coming in with lower satisfaction.
That hurts.
See, I'm amazed that anything is lower than Hartsfield in Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, Hartsfield definitely ranked higher than O'Hare this year. and actually ranked a little bit above average. So there you go.
Wow. Okay. In closing, what's the best airport out of the big airports? Who would we go to for the best?
So the mega airports is what they call them, similar to O'Hare. That would be the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport. Ooh. That came in at the very top.
All right. Interesting.
So we should all plan a flight to Minneapolis-St. Paul?
Connect through Minneapolis.
Sounds like that's the best way to enjoy your vacation.
Sarah, thanks a lot for your time today. Appreciate it. And thanks for the information on the J.D. Power survey of airports in this country.
Steve King and Johnny Putman in for John Williams on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And I got to tell you, if I kind of bobble my words, it's because I'm kind of going as I'm looking at the Sugar Bliss website.
Oh, I know.
Boy.
Well,
oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Oh boy.
For our business lunch today, inflation is the business talk of the day. And Teresa Ging is the owner of Sugar Bliss. And that's what Steve is salivating over. And I've got to say, Teresa, first of all, welcome to the show. And
thank you.
And congratulations on the best name for a business, Sugar Bliss.
Yeah, really.
Yes, it's a good name, right?
Well, tell us all about Sugar Bliss.
Yeah, so Sugar Bliss is a woman minority-owned bakery. We're in downtown. We're at the Palmer House Hilton at 122 South Wabash. I started the business about 15 years ago. I actually left finance and then started Sugar Bliss. But we do everything from cupcakes, cake pops, French macaroons. We have cookies, brownies. We have some gluten-free and vegan options.
Yay.
We deliver and we ship nationwide. And then also we recently launched four different types of cookies into 25 Chicago Walgreens. So we're expanding beyond the retail store now.
Wow. Then you're not just a small business. I mean, you really got a firm footing here in the city.
Yeah, we have good roots down here. We've been here for 15 years, so mm-hmm. we're trying to make Sugar Bliss a household brand everywhere.
Awesome.
And partly personal, a lot of our listeners know that I am absolutely gluten intolerant, so God bless you for all the gluten-free goodies you have. And how was there a moment when you decided, okay, we got to add a gluten-free offerings to our menu?
Yeah, we probably had it for a good, 10 years now. My sister is actually gluten intolerant, so we developed the cupcake for her, and so we have the gluten-free cupcake, and then we added on a brownie, a cookie. Most of our macarons are gluten-free, and then, we really listened to our customers, and so, vegan was another, thing that people constantly mm-hmm. asked us for. And so now we have a vegan cupcake, and we're actually developing a red velvet one as well. So we listen to a lot of the customers' feedback and trends that are going on, So we kind of have a lot of different offerings for, anyone that has a sweet tooth.
Is chocolate still the most popular?
Yes, chocolate is. I mean, our red velvet cupcake is very popular. We also have a cookie called Oh My God, our OMG.
Because
it has potato chips, pretzels, Captain Crunch cereal, chocolate chips, oats, and a hint of coffee. And we actually sell this one at Walgreens as well. So when you say all those ingredients or look at all those ingredients, you'll say, Oh My God. So that's our number one selling cookie at Sugar Bliss.
Absolutely. And trust me, folks. I here's a little tip for you. If you break cookies in two, the calories fall out, knock yourself out. They're all good then, right?
Yes.
Sarah, on the business lunch, we want to talk about, is that your mixer going off? Your giant mixer?
Oh, that's our espresso machine. Sorry, I'm in my store.
That's okay. That's all right. We want to talk about, it is the business lunch, and inflation and cost of living and all that good stuff is really heavy on our minds. Goldman Sachs came out with a survey of small business owners and how they're being affected by inflation. You've been around for 10 years now. How is this year for you, and how is inflation affecting you as a small business owner?
Yeah, I mean, definitely costs have increased a lot of our products, ranging from flour to butter to sugar. We've also seen issues where some products are not available because of the supply chain, so we've had to change to other brands. So, definitely things have increased from last year on,
Could you Could you give us an idea of what flour would cost you last year compared to this year? I want extra foam on mine. Now, come on.
Yeah, me too.
Sorry about that. Yep, we have customer. I could definitely tell you, like, butter. You know, when I first started 15 years ago, it was, like, $78 for, like, 36 pounds of butter. And now we're at, like, $140.
Ooh.
But, I mean, just it's definitely increased maybe, I would say, at least 15 to 20% butter, you know, milk as well. You know, you can actually buy milk that is probably cheaper at the grocery store than with a food service, you know. So, you know, milk can be like $4 to $5 per gallon versus when you buy it at the store, it's like, you know, $3. But we are definitely seeing increased costs in just like normal stuff like flour and sugar as well.
Well, hang in there. Keep doing what you're doing, and people can find...
I can't tell you how hungry you have made us.
He's literally salivating. I'm not kidding you. They can find Sugar Bliss downtown in the Loop and 122 South Wabash. Is that right?
Yeah, we're at 122 South Wabash, on Wabash between Adams and Monroe, at the Wabash entrance at the Palmer House Hilton.
I was actually reading Steve's palm of his hand. He wrote it down, and he held it up for me. Apparently, he's going there today, so thank you so much.
We'll see you. We're here until 6:30 tonight.
So awesome. Thanks a lot for joining us today. Nice to meet you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now we will check out the let me look at my John Williams.
It's your
handbook
roadmap
here. And now we will get the Wintrust Business Minute with Steve Krasanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new ranking of business schools is out, and University of Chicago is tied with Harvard for the number two spot. The rankings for the best MBA programs are part of Bloomberg Business Week's 2022-2023 Best B Schools Report. U of C's Booth School of Business jumped two spots from last year. The Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University moved up to number four this year from fifth place last year. Stanford held on to its ranking as the top business school in the U.S. Amtrak says it's taking steps to lessen its carbon footprint and will achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2045. The company says it'll happen thanks to a mix of new equipment and modernized stations. Amtrak says it plans to reduce its diesel fuel usage by 2030. It also is conducting research into fuel cells, hydrogen, batteries, and other zero-emission technologies. Amtrak's CEO says it'll all happen as trains remain convenient and comfortable. I'm Steve Krasanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Hi, Johnny. It's Mr. Fizz Friday, and we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Okay, Jim Fizzell, what time is it?
It's apple time, Steve. Gorgeous fall weather is here, and when we get this kind of weather, it always reminds me of apples. Apple pies in particular, but apples in general.
You know, I think I found a good theme song for you today, Jim. One that anyone with a toddler probably knows.
I love apples, so many kinds. Let me share my apple knowledge with you.
All right, lay some knowledge on us.
Okay. In fact, we just got back from Apple Country, Wisconsin, the Kickapoo. That's the home country of our good friend Orion Samuelson. And Apple Fest at Gays Mills is this weekend, so that's a good time to be up there. But there are plenty of apples everywhere right now. The quality is pretty good because of the warm, sunny days and cool nights we've had throughout the Midwest. So for eating, I would really recommend Honeycrisp or Empire or maybe Mutsu. For pies, as far as I'm concerned, there's really only one good pineapple. That's Cortland. It's a New York variety that's probably been around 100 years. And then Granny Smith, which is popular. It's all green. It makes really good pies. The only problem with it is it's crisp. The Cortlands come out to be firm, but not crisp. Now, where do you get them? Well, right now, the orchards are full of them. Pick your own farm. They're all over this part of the country, and not just here in Illinois, but in Indiana, Michigan, and, of course, up in Wisconsin. If you're looking for a list in your county Farm Bureau will have those. Anyway, it's a time to get out and enjoy this spectacular weather. If you can go out and get some apples and make an apple pie, that makes it even more special. Take the whole family when you go out. Some places will even allow you to bring the dogs so you can really have the family together to get some apples. Nothing better than a gorgeous fall day.
So how do you like your apple pie, Jim?
I really like apple pie with cheese on it. Good Wisconsin-grown cheese.
Cheese?
Oh, yeah. You have to have a slice of cheese on that slice of apple pie that's been warmed up just a little bit. It kind of melts over the edge. Wow.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, From the farm to your belly, today's National Pot Pie Day, also National White Chocolate Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
And we're joined now by Jane Oates, who is the president of Working Nation. Jane, hi. How you doing?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. Big news this week about holiday hiring. I think I saw Walmart said they're going to hire something like 40,000 people, and Target is in that same ballpark. What's your take on, are those people out there, and are they going to be able to fill those holes? What do you think, Jane?
Well, I just hope people get, you know, the incentive to come back to work. Our labor market participation rate is still really low, and we need to encourage people to come back. I think these part-time holiday jobs are a great way, you know, to like dip your finger in and come back into the workforce.
Why are they not coming back? And what's your theory on why they're not coming back? I mean, you still have to pay the rent and you still have to put food on the table.
Or is it that a lot of people don't want to have to physically go into a workspace? They're used to working from home.
I think both of you have hit on something. First of all, you know, absolutely, I think there's still a lot of fear. People have PTSD after this COVID pandemic. You know, they've seen people in their families get really sick, and they've seen people die. So there's a lot of fear out there. I think parents are really nervous about school. And, you know, I think as schools have reopened, they've had great safety protocols, and people should feel comfortable coming back. But believe me, I think too many people have dipped into their savings. And with the stock market the way it's been impacting 401ks and regular savings, it's time to get back in and start replenishing those funds.
Mm-hmm. But what do you say to people to encourage them to do that? I mean, if, for example, if somebody has been used to staying at home and they're, like you say, we all have had friends that have passed away because of COVID. If there are people that are a little reluctant for any of a number of reasons to step outside the home, what do you say to counter that?
So I think they need to talk to the prospective employer. They need to find out what the protocols are at that workplace. Mm-hmm. Would they be welcome to wear a mask if that was their choice? Would they be welcome to distance from other workers? Now, in some jobs, that's really not possible. We know that. But I think employers need to be a little bit more flexible when they're talking to prospective employees to kind of say, you know, we care about you. We want to invest in you. I mean, the surest way is making sure that every employer gives people paid sick leave so they don't feel that if they have to go to work, they have to go in sick because they don't get paid if they go in. So I think that's a start. But I do think people are just so discouraged. I'm sure your listeners and both of you, Steve, Johnny, you know people who tell you they've put in hundreds of resumes online and haven't heard a word back.
Yeah.
They don't even get a rejection letter anymore.
Yeah.
It's just nothing. And I think we forget that people who have stepped out of the workforce are really, they need their confidence built. So, you know, in Chicagoland, look, you have one of the best workforce boards in the country. So I think they need to go physically into a workforce board so that they can go to some of these job fairs and meet the employers or their prospective employers face-to-face. And I think that's a really good point, Johnny, about the seasonal hiring. Most of that is going to be done in job fairs. You're going to be able to see people and ask them questions and get an answer right there about whether you have a good chance of getting a job or not.
I want to underscore what you were talking about just a minute or so ago about talking with your employer about being comfortable in the workplace. Before we came back, I'll make it very personal. Before we agreed to come down and work from the WGN Radio studios, we had a conversation with WGN Radio Management. I'm immunocompromised. I need to be very, very careful about the environment I'm in. And WGN Radio Management couldn't have been better. The studios are clean. We wear masks. There are several people walking throughout the halls that wear masks. So that they accommodate our concerns, which made us feel comfortable coming back into this physical workspace.
Steve, I think it's key, right? I mean, making sure you feel safe, making sure that there are procedures in place. And that doesn't mean, you know, we have to go back to where we were during the height of this pandemic, but it certainly means we don't go back to where we were before the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, where people were using cups without washing them, where there were kitchens in workplaces that didn't have dishwashers, so dishes were really cleaned and sterilized.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the new normal has to put worker safety at the top of the list.
Well, in closing, Jane, are you optimistic as we move into the end of this year and we approach the holidays? I mean, what is your view?
Oh, Johnny, I'm really optimistic. I was in Chicago 2 weeks ago in a new cool neighborhood, Fulton Market, which I thought was fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
It was teeming with people at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. And today, I just got back from New York. New York was almost back to normal. It was so crowded, you couldn't walk on the street. So I think people, you know, and that's good for people, for their psychological outlooks that mm-hmm. they can get out and about. But it's also really good for business. And what's good for business is good for our economy. It creates jobs. It helps these businesses thrive. So I am really, really optimistic. I just am hoping no real, you know, left punches from Mother Nature. You know,
yeah.
I want to keep weather the way it is right now,
yep.
where people can get out and about. Let's hold off that snow. Let's hold off these hurricanes. No tornadoes. None of that. Give us a couple months to really get back into a vibrant, thriving economy.
Amen. Thank you for that positive note to end on, Jane.
And I love your enthusiasm, Jane.
Yes.
Well, it's contagious from you guys.
Oh, thank you for joining us, and have a great weekend, Jane.
Thanks so much. You too, and to all your listeners. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.